hello, hello, and welcome to this special episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. All week, we've been airing a special series of episodes with in-depth interviews on interesting topics with interesting people. Nicole and I have been on a week-long vacation while Undivided moves into a new studio, thus the special week of episodes. We don't cancel shows because we're on vacation. First of all, we have to make a living. A podcast is our job, so we can't really just cancel episodes. But we also love you guys. We miss you too much. We don't want to leave you hanging. So we've got a great interview guest for you today. I always say in this job, and this has been true, I think, for the last decade of my career in Seattle, I get attacked by the right and the left. And I try to convince myself, hey, if I'm being attacked by both sides, maybe I'm doing something right. It's either that or you're like incredibly annoying and just no one likes you for good reason, or you're doing something right. So someone else who's been experiencing this lately is Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders. He found himself in a lot of bit of controversy after he decided to hire on a Tacoma police officer, former Tacoma police officer, who was acquitted in the 2020 murder of Manny Ellis. His name is Christopher Burbank. Well, when the sheriff's office announced and when Sheriff Sanders announced that Christopher Burbank was being hired on at the department, there was a lot of different strong reactions in the community. Some people on the side of activists who thought, why would you hire someone who was on trial for murder as a police officer? And then folks on the other side, which is sort of where I landed, which is he was acquitted by a jury of his peers. There's no investigation into his conduct that suggested he violated policy or he violated the law. So are you supposed to tell me that he can't, because Bob Ferguson wanted to pursue a political prosecution, that he can't work as a police officer anymore? So after backlash from, you know, the fringe activists and, it turns out, some other community members as well, Sheriff Sanders announced that Officer Burbank, now Sheriff Deputy Burbank, would be resigning just a couple days after his hire was announced. So I asked Sheriff Sanders to come in to talk about the decision-making behind the hire. We also talked about some critical public safety issues facing the entire state, not just his department. Sheriff Derek Sanders, welcome in the flesh to Undivided.
I know. Thanks for having
me. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good.
You doing well?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you know, it's been a busy 16 months, and yeah, I was able to leave for a little bit and go on vacation and reset myself, and yeah, I'm feeling good now.
Yeah. So we've been talking about getting you in for a longer interview for some time. I think whenever we have you on, it's usually a one-off sort of thing.
Yep.
And I was like, hey, you know, we want to talk about the Christopher Burbank issue.
Yeah.
You're like, well, okay, but I'm not thrilled about it, but yes.
Sure.
So you decided to hire Christopher Burbank, who he didn't get fired. He left the Tacoma Police Department, but he was acquitted for murder. At the onset of that, you must have had reservations.
No, and I think that's what caught me so off guard. You know, in my mind, like, the way that my mind works is that I have to have an end point for everything that I'm doing. Like, we can always strive to be better, but, you know, take like pay, for instance. If the union and the county can't agree to pay, they go to arbitration. And an arbitrator decides at the end of it, like, what the pay is going to be, and everyone just has to accept it. And that's how I've always perceived jury trials to be as well. So it was a total miscalculation on my part that so many people would be upset with that. Because in my mind at the time, changed my perspective quite a bit. I was like, well, I've dealt with so many cases where it's my case and someone gets acquitted. And I'm like, well, that's what the jury decided. Mm-hmm. Like, even when it was my case and it was personal to me as a police officer. So the fact that I've always just accepted it has just been kind of how I viewed that.
Yeah.
So no, at first I didn't really have any reservations.
Well, you said you didn't realize so many people would be upset by it. Is it so many people or was it a few loud people?
It was. It was more. And I've had the same conversation internally with my staff because they had the same questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're caving and whatnot. And see, I don't view it as caving because there are people that I have to just disregard because they complain that I'm breathing. Like, they don't even want me to exist.
They're never going to support anything you do.
They're never going to support anything I do. They're going to show up and yell and scream. There's also a lot of people in the community that I dearly respect and take advice from who were upset with that decision. And so I think that's where it's easier for people to say, oh, you're caving. Okay. But it's people that I do care about. It's people who are very thoughtful and have helped me and helped guide me. And when those people are reaching out, I do have to take a step back and think, okay, what am I doing and what is it for?
But to be fair, and this is something that you know, wanted to add clarity on when I had, because I don't know if you felt like, did you feel like I was unfair?
No, I mean, your job is... your job... And here's the thing, right? I think you come across very independent. I am 100% independent. And this is very clear by the fact that, you know, in a matter of 2 days, I made everyone mad. It's like the true test of being independent.
It's a lonely place to
be. It's a lonely place to be, right? And so I didn't think that it was unfair. The one thing I will say that I felt like was unfair through the entire process... is, you know, I really worked my butt off the last 16 months to try and get some good changes going, to turn our sheriff's office around, to improve staffing, to get some laws changed. And all of a sudden it was like, none of that mattered. And I was like, you know, okay, you know, I'm willing to accept responsibility for this. But there was 16 really good months of good work by both myself, my administration, and the staff at my office. And it kind of felt like that just went out the window. And I didn't like that.
Yeah. So to be clear, though, you didn't change your mind in the sense that you didn't fire him.
No, I did not fire.
So are you willing? I know you had a private conversation and I certainly can respect that, but what was the ultimate deciding factor for him after just a couple days resigning?
This wasn't the county for him to work in. This is like, I think, to be totally upfront and honest, like there's nothing preventing him from going and being a police officer. But I think there is something to be said about, you know, one county down, you know, a couple months after he's been acquitted, had he you know, applied to work on the east side of the state or something like that, I doubt this would have even been an issue. But, you know, I have to listen to my community, and my community, at least a good portion of it said no. They made that extremely clear. Now, I think it was probably 50-50, if I had to guess. Probably half the community was like, he was acquitted. The other half was no. But 50% of the community not wanting or wanting something is a tough place to be in.
But to be clear, you did not ask him to resign, or did you?
No.
Did you pressure him to resign?
No. We both had a mutual conversation about, because he was like, listen, like, this is rough. And from his perspective, I don't think he wanted the other members of the sheriff's office to get dragged down into this, you know, presuming there's probably going to be protests and all these different things. And when he got to the point where he was like, this isn't the place I want to be, I had to respect that because even I was thinking to myself, like, if I were in his shoes, I wouldn't go back into law enforcement, to be quite frank.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I was surprised to see any of them seek, at least in Washington state, seek a career in law enforcement.
Sure.
You know, not saying they don't have the right to, but you mentioned in your release that his family was getting death threats. Is the sheriff's office investigating those death threats?
No, we had a very brief conversation about that, and he was like, I just want to move on.
So he doesn't want them investigated.
He was just like, I'm just ready to move on. He told me his family was out of state for the meantime. So
wow. So out of state because of the death threats?
I don't know. I didn't clarify that piece, but it didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm like, listen, you know, I don't want him getting death threats. I don't want him working somewhere where he doesn't feel supported by the community. And, you know, on that end of things as well, you know, this is where I took accountability for this because I should have recognized that Thurston County wasn't going to be the fit for him. That's, you know, and I recognized, and that's where that letter came from, was like, you know, you can recognize maybe that you don't necessarily always have to agree, but you can also acknowledge that your decision has hurt people's feelings and things like that. Like, both of those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's where I felt bad, honestly, is just that I recognize that there's a lot of people who have a lot of faith in me for a lot of different reasons, whether it be racial or socioeconomic, my past, all these different things that I've tried to bring to the table. And I did feel bad that I wasn't able to recognize this for all involved parties.
Yeah, but that's, you realize that you can't, you cannot, you'll never be able to please everyone.
Nope,
clearly. And at some point, you know, as the sheriff, you have to trust in your own gut and your own instincts before that reason, right? So I guess, how does it change your decision-making moving forward, having gone through that
situation? Well, you know, and again, with this whole thing, the sheriff's office has been terribly staffed for a long time. And so when I got elected, it was very much a put a pause on everything. If it's not staffing related, I already don't care. Like, we have to get the staffing done. And that is, it's really like dominated my life and my entire thought process. So I think moving forward on any decision making, I think I just need to slow down a little bit more, because honestly, in hindsight, I think I could have had a much more realistic conversation with Burbank about, like, hey man, Thurston County probably isn't the place where you're going to want to work. And I could have foreseen that, And I think that was the biggest error that I made in all of that is, you know, I feel like I've done a pretty good job over the last 16 months about gauging community interest in the things that we're doing and explaining why we're doing things the way we do. And this one was just one where I totally... totally had a lapse.
Well, I can appreciate your, you know, I'm very pro-police, as long as you're a good officer. I can appreciate your desire and your recognition that you're a public servant and that there is a big segment that just doesn't like the police, but it doesn't make their voices, I got to take a deep breath and say this, doesn't make their voices less valid as citizens of the state, you know, so I can get there. My concern is, and I articulated on the show, I view you as a soldier in our fight for sanity. I really do. I think you've spoken out about things when others won't, you know, on public safety issues. So it was almost like this, oh no, he gave into the mob again. I did feel that way because you also issued an endorsement in a school board race. Mm-hmm. The crazy mob's like, how could you do this? This person's anti-trans, like went after him for coming to an event with me, which you know I'm not anti-trans. Right. So I know you had your own reasons for deciding to rescind that endorsement, but then this happened. So do you feel like you've emboldened that segment of maybe the activist crowd that's going to believe, well, all we have to do is put enough pressure on Sheriff Sanders and he'll do whatever we want him to do?
No, because I push back on a number of other things, in my opinion. There's also been pushback on pursuit laws and things like that where I've absolutely 100% stood my ground. Yeah. And, you know, this is the same concern that I'm sure other people have as well. But in everything that I'm doing, you know, and I recently had a lateral deputy come on board and we were talking about this and I was like, yeah, this is rough, you know, like this just sucks. And, you know, one of the claims is, you know, oh, no one's going to want to come work for you now.
Yeah.
And it was interesting and it helped me a lot because he's like, well, I want to come work for you. And the reason I want to come work for you is no one wants to work for someone who always thinks they're right and can't reverse course. So I think there is a balance there, right? I'll be totally frank. The reason I took this job is because the person before me never said sorry, never acknowledged they were ever wrong. I never once heard an apology for anything they ever said. So I think there's two extremes, and I'm always trying to find that middle ground. Like, to assume that I'm never going to have to rescind a decision is silly. Everyone wants the sheriff who's just going to do whatever he wants and stick to it and never turn back. And to me, that seems like the same course that everyone else. I mean, you're going to end up at a point where you really think you're always right and that you never make a mistake and have to apologize and turn around and go the other direction. So it's a balance, but I would say there's been enough things that I think I've demonstrated that I will push back on bail reform, all these types of things that are hurting us, that I think there's enough evidence to suggest that I'm not just going to fold over every time. But I also have to look, you know, the same thing with the endorsement, like, you know, I have to weigh what's most important to me and my staff and my agency. And that was another important lesson to learn about endorsements. And, you know, not that I should or shouldn't have endorsed, but being careful and strategic about what I'm doing.
Yeah. And if it's worth whatever backlash might come. Well, I think that's fair. I think that's a good answer. And this is a show called Undivided. I think you're right. I think people who and politicians who are never wrong and can never make a mistake, there's too many of them. So, all right. As long as you believe in the decisions you're making, even if you change your mind, I'm on board.
I do. I have to always be able to take criticism and look at it and really pull myself out of the decision-making circle that I have and say, is this really what's best for everyone?
And can your deputies be assured that you have their back if they're doing their job correctly?
We had a deputy meeting where I called every single staff member into the room and let them go after me. Same thing, right? Of are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And we had an internal conversation as well. And, you know, the one thing that came up is there's still deputies who disagree with me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But most of them came up to me afterwards and said, you know what? You stood in the fire and took the heat. So for that, you have my respect at least. So, you know, I think there's one thing about me, like I'll stand in the face of criticism and handle it and take it and move on and learn from it.
Well, hell, I told you and I was texting you like, hey, like I'm going to be critically about you on the show today, but I'm still a fan. I mean, you stood with the community when it came to the sexually violent predators and other issues. And so it's like, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You're not going to agree with someone on everything. And we shouldn't demand that of people. So let's move on. I want to talk generally about the public safety challenges we're facing in the state because they're so severe. 2024 is a wonderful opportunity to sort of right the ship a little bit. Does it feel to you like some of the Democrats or the politicians who supported some of these policies are starting to change their minds a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. Because this has been such a battle of like, you're telling me that what's in front of me isn't happening.
Yeah.
And we saw this on like the pursuit legislation right. and stuff, right? Like the 60%+ increase in auto theft. Well, it wasn't
because of the pursuit laws. COVID.
And there's a national trend.
There's a TikTok video.
Yeah. It's like, okay. I'm like, the national trend is like 3% though, yeah. not 60. There's yeah. a big gap there. And so I think one of the things that was really shocking to me coming into this, because I'm like, I'm going to testify and yeah. no one knows who I am yet, but like, I'm going to try and get this stuff mm-hmm. done. And going up there and hearing the, like, just the crazy arguments as yeah. to like why something's happening. And I'm like, no, you guys don't understand it. Like, the reason that we've got so many auto thefts is because we're trying to stop them and they don't have to pull over.
Right.
And the case is dead.
Yeah.
No, that can't be it. So that was really a strange thing, but I do think that there is sort of a turn here, and we said it when this happened in 2021, like it'll get bad enough.
Yeah.
You know, at some point in time, it will get so bad where people are like, okay, we've hit a bottom of some sort
yeah.
and we have to reverse course. Same concept.
Yeah. What scares me though is 2024 is like, I don't know if this is the barometer because you always have politicians act more reasonable in an election year. Everyone mm-hmm. tries to moderate themselves. So like Bob Ferguson, whoever it is, can act like, oh, I'm pro public safety, but will they act that way after they get sworn in? That's what yeah. I don't have confidence in. So I feel like it's going to be 2025 or 2026 before we really see whether the tide is turning.
Yeah. And I think you're going to find that no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, during the election years, you know, you're going to get a different tone.
Yeah.
Because everyone who's had their car broken into and had their car stolen, had their house burglarized or had a loved one hurt or killed on the roadways because, you know, our traffic fatalities keep, you know, going up tenfold every year. You know, those are the ones who are going to be paying attention during this. And, you know, everyone's got to kind of become at least like not as anti-cop
yeah.
I think, in those times.
Yeah. And the laws can change, but we also have to have enough police officers out there to be able to enforce the yep. laws. You know, the serious things and the issues that lead to quality of life concerns. So you guys are short staffed, not worse off than some agencies though. You're doing okay.
We're doing okay now.
Yeah.
But we had to do a lot of things to make ourselves competitive.
Like?
We offered a signing bonus. So we're the furthest south agency in this state now, until you get to like Vancouver, mm-hmm. I think, that offers a signing bonus for laterals.
How much?
$25,000.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a lot of work. I had to really fight for that one.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a bunch of barriers in the way, human resources and negotiations and guilds and unions and stuff. So that took me like 9 months to get that, to get that one thing done. We've also done a lot of things too. You know, my agency is a little unique in the fact that I'm in a very expensive place to live. And we're the lowest paid agency in the region.
Mm.
And so as a result of that, you know, I've really had to turn the recruiting thing on its head, because it's not going to be about base salary if you want to come to the sheriff's office. For us, we've been increasing the number of specialty assignments we have to try and recruit people over. And then we've also changed it to where laterals can apply for specialties once they're off FTO. So those are some of the things that I think are actually starting to work, because those are the applicants I want, quite frankly. I'm not really interested in the applicant who's coming here because they want to make more money. I really want people who are interested in doing the work. Because this isn't the job, as you know, where you're going to go get rich no matter what.
Yeah.
So really trying to focus on the applicants who want to come do good police work. And so we've done some things like that, but you know, even in my jail is one of the only jails in this entire region that is not on any kind of booking restriction due to staffing or COVID or whatever.
Oh, nice.
It is.
Okay.
And that was a big piece on what yeah. I ran for. Like, I'm going to open this jail up and we're going to start holding people accountable. So some of those things, you're right, we're definitely not doing as bad off, but the whole state is in a slump.
Yeah. Where are laterals coming to you from?
Let's see. I've got, I think, a couple from King County, a couple from Pierce County, and a couple local.
Gotcha.
And then a couple out of state, actually.
Okay.
Which is crazy. I know. You're going to come here and do police work.
Like, maybe if they're from California. Like, yeah. I just don't know where else.
Yeah, I think one from Arizona.
Ooh,
and our most recent lateral hire was from Florida. Just wanting a different
wow.
world to live in. And, you know, to be fair, you know, for some of these laterals who are coming from out of state, Washington does not have the best track record for law enforcement.
Correct.
For people coming into the state. However, you know, the cost of housing may be cheaper in Florida, but an F-150 still costs the same. So, you know, they're coming here and there, and even coming to my department, they're getting a massive raise. So it's not hard to really see why.
Yeah. You were also telling me offline that, you know, one of the challenges for you in being competitive is the funding issue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the same capacity as a county agency to get money that a city department has.
Yes. Yeah. So like if you come to an agent, like Pierce County is a little bit different because Parkland Spanaway, that's all unincorporated county. Mm. So they've got just miles and miles of business revenue. Here in Thurston County, we got a Winco. You know, everything else is pretty much property tax. That's how we get funded. If you're going to go shop and buy things in Thurston County, it's almost a guarantee that you are somewhere in city limits somewhere.
Wow,
and so that tax revenue is going to the city. It's not coming to the sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. And so we just have a challenge, I think. And I know the county commissioners are working to try and get, you know, to speed up business applications and permits and stuff to create these business districts to get some sales tax generated. But that's ultimately what led to us putting that public safety Proposition 1 on the ballot last year. Is really what it is it's taking the entire sales tax around the entire county and siphoning off 0.2% mm-hmm. to go to just the sheriff's office.
Yeah. And I'm sorry for not knowing, did that pass or not pass?
It did pass. It passed by 12%.
And when will you see the real outcome from that?
June. The money starts trickling in June.
Okay.
Yeah. So this won't be a full year, but it'll help pay off some things that we really needed, help paying off like more background investigators to get people hired in, which was a big deal for us. You know, when I took over this office, I had one part-time background investigator.
Yeah.
I now have 15.
I guess considering that, you know, Olympia voters got to vote on that, correct?
They did.
Was it only on
whole county?
Whole county.
Countywide.
I'm kind of surprised it passed. That might show a changing sentiment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of our thing was like really explaining to people the challenges that we're having.
You know,
we've got 7 deputies working for 150,000 people. And so, you know, I had a county commissioner out on a ride along with me one night, and there was a pretty serious injury collision where people got ejected. It was a mass casualty. You know, you had 5 or 6 injuries. We had 4 deputies there, and I said, "Hey, come to my car real quick." And I pulled up the map that shows the GPS, and I'm like, there's 3 deputies for the rest of the county right now. And that assault with a baseball bat is going to sit until we're ready.
Yep.
And it was like, wow, holy cow. Like you guys are really, and that's every night. Every night we're just getting completely overloaded with call volume. So
yeah, people don't realize I went on a ride along once with Pierce County Sheriff's deputies. And I mean, there was like a domestic violence in progress. And the deputy I was with, it's like, I can respond, but I'm going to be alone for about 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And making those decisions about, I mean, because that's one of the most unpredictable situations. A law enforcement officer, as you know, can go into a DV situation. So they went, but it's like, you know, because either this woman might die,
right,
or I've got to wait 40 minutes. Yep. So it's a unique situation as a sheriff's office.
It's a reality of our unique position and what we do as rural law enforcement. And, you know, last year I had to slash their training to stay under my budget. So not only are they working, I've got about 30... For last year and going into this year, I have about 34 working deputies because, you know, you got people on vacation, on sick leave, baby leave. They're out on injury. So I had about 34 working deputies that were splitting about 1,200 hours of overtime a month between them. And on top of that, we're not able to train them. And so you've got tired deputies who are less trained than their counterparts going to violent crime by themselves. And like Pierce County is a little bit bigger, but 20 minutes, you know, by themselves on these calls where violent crimes and they're intervening. You know, I've said for a long time, we're not good. We're just lucky.
It drives me nuts, though, stuff like that when, you know, they get just the universal hate. It's like you don't even realize the shit they have to deal with.
It's crazy.
Like you don't even realize you would. And it's these cowardice people who, you know, vilifying the police who would never run toward any sort of danger in their lives. And it's like, if you even knew, and I even think about it whenever there's a crazy accident and there's been a couple involving kids, it's like, can you imagine that being a weekly thing for you to come up and see dead people in a car and dead children?
On my way up here, you know, I'm listening to the radio and we're on a code 10, you know, priority call with the beepers going. And it was someone who committed suicide in the parking lot and our sergeant found him.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, gunshot wound to the head. Yeah. And like people don't recognize like, look, this stuff sucks to see all the time.
You don't get used to that.
You don't.
No, you pretend like you get used to it, but you don't. So let's talk about a couple things that are on the horizon. So I don't know, is it early June police pursuits, the initiative will become law. What will change in Thurston County the day that happens?
I cannot speak for the other agencies in Thurston County, but we have already basically finished our draft policy. So right now our draft policy is being finished and we are... basically what I did was I called together our driver instructors, our firearm instructors, our defensive tactics, our patrol tactics, and our our county attorney to get together and figure out, hey, what should our policy look like? And so we're going to go back to pursuing anything that's a law violation. So that includes traffic issues, warrants, violent crime, property crime. And the biggest change that you're going to see, because that new law, it keeps talking about needing to end the pursuit as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. One thing that we're going to be doing a lot different than what you're probably going to see other agencies is that our deputies will no longer need permission to conduct a pit maneuver. Our policy says okay. They need permission. So they will no longer need permission, and there's no longer a speed associated to how fast they can pit.
Gotcha.
Instead, what we're going to do is say, hey, we're going to work on the training side of things to get people trained up and understanding the pit maneuver better and the physics and the science behind it. But really what they need to be doing is applying the case law, the Graham v. Connor factors mm-hmm. of, you know, the risk of the crime or the severity of the crime. Are they actively fleeing and those kinds of things. So we're going to be working on getting that together because I want these deputies removing these cars as soon as possible from the roadway.
So you steal a car in Thurston County, like, you're going to chase them if they drive away.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, and nobody wants like a cop chase, you know? I mean, I'm right. sure your deputies, they're not out there itching to go 80, 90 miles an hour and risk their lives in that. So I guess, you know, you kind of articulated it there, but where is the point where the chase isn't worth it?
And that's going to be a case by case. But, you know, I'll actually argue that the law wouldn't allow a deputy to chase for no turn signal through a school zone at 2 p.m.
Right.
It literally now is codified. It would not allow that. That, I think, objectively would not, you know, the risk and reward isn't there. It's a little bit different for rural sheriff's offices because our risk is significantly lower than, you know, downtown Seattle where you got a pedestrian every 3 feet. So for us, a lot of it has to do with the time of day, the location, the reason for the pursuit, the road conditions. Is it rainy? Is it snowy? And then, you know, is there traffic present? Is there pedestrians present? And for most of us, for us, most of the time, it's no. There's no traffic. There's no pedestrians. So we get the green light a little more often.
And that's one of the points that Brian Haywood, who ran the initiatives, brought up is this one size fits all law.
Right.
Doesn't make sense. It's not the same for a Seattle police officer as, you know, a rural agency or mm-hmm. in Eastern Washington where high speeds aren't such a big deal. So when that goes into effect, what's the ripple effect there on public safety? You know, did you ever watch the clip of the Seattle City Councilwoman, Tammy Morales, being asked about, so we'll play it. She was being asked about stolen vehicles and, you know, they're like, oh, it's just a property crime. And a reporter said, well, you know that they're being used to commit other crimes like smash and grabs. And she's like, I've never heard that. This is like a few months ago. She never heard that. So when you can pursue, and now you're setting that expectation that you cannot run from us, what are the larger public safety implications where you expect to see improvements?
Well, first of all, to comment on Morales, I think that's a failure on us as law enforcement. We need to do a better job educating people, clearly, right? I
mean, like, don't give her that much credit. Like, but she's a council member.
It's been true for me, though, right? Yeah. Like, I've had to really take the extra time. My county commissioners are probably tired of me because I'm in there every single week. I gave them a briefing on the pursuit laws just because. And, like, here's all the things that we're going to be changing and stuff. So, you know, we do have to do a better job, I think, in law enforcement as a whole of, like, trying to educate people on this stuff. And side note, like flock cameras, those license plate readers things.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Puyallup PD, they did a fantastic video where they go through and they actually educate the public on like what it is and isn't. And like that's the kind of outreach I think we need to be focusing on. But I think the long-term ripple effects, you know, as a sheriff's office, when I was a deputy, you know, before the laws changed, people knew that we would chase the wheels off you. And I would say, you know, if you really you know, did a ton of traffic stops and were out there being proactive in Thurston County, you'd maybe find a pursuit a week at best.
Yeah.
Maybe every 2 weeks. And now you're seeing, you know, every night there's about 5 to 10 cars that are fleeing Thurston County.
Insane.
Which is, you know, a couple thousand percent increase.
Insane.
It is crazy. It's crazy. And I had a county commissioner with me and we went to go stop a car and it's a stolen car that's shoplifting.
Yeah.
And it flees and she's like, what are we doing? And I'm like, it's gone. And she's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, the law says that we can't chase it. She's like, but it's stolen. That's a felony crime. And I'm like, exactly.
Yes, you should tell. But what I mean also is what those cars are being used to do, like smash and grabs, like getaway vehicles for armed robberies. Do you expect to see some of those serious felony crimes drop because you're able to crack down on stolen vehicles?
Yes, I do. Okay. Not at first. I think June to December is going to be a mess. I think it's going to be a mess. People are going to be running still, and they're going to be testing the water. And, you know, the thing that some of the legislators have correctly brought up is that not every agency is going to go back to
SPD, their old policy. Bellevue.
The Tacoma, they're all going to have restrictive policies because it is a little more dangerous. But I think for our perspective, that it's going to be a mess here for a little bit. There's going to be just a ton of cars running, and we're going to have to do a good job of weighing that risk and reward. But I think as we slowly chip away at that cancer, that mentality of like, I can just do whatever I want, I think we will start to see big improvement, in my opinion, particularly in homicide. A lot of stolen cars, a lot of additional crimes being committed in this lawlessness type setting that lead to homicide. Also, in traffic fatalities, I think we're actually going to see traffic fatalities plateau because, as you know, over the last 3 years, I mean, they are exploding. Yeah. The traffic fatality stuff is.
I'm glad you're setting the expectations because I can already see how disingenuous this is going to get. You know, the first week there's going to still be people running and Democrats going to say, see, that didn't make a difference. And it's like, no, you do have to give it a little bit of time.
We need time.
Word to get around to the criminals that like we're going to do this. One other thing I want to ask you about, and I don't really know the answer, but, you know, we're looking at this whole crime crisis and the ecosystem that's led up to it. And you have a lot of people who, as you probably know, same group. They're responsible for a vast majority of the thing. So if you can just get them under control, you're going to see substantial improvements. I feel like our drug crisis is one of those things where the drug crisis is contributing to so many other crimes.
Yeah.
If we were to really crack down on drug abuse and actually make meaningful progress on substance abuse in that crisis, how much would that like help and correlate to reduction in crime?
I just had this question at an event that I spoke at. You know, if we could address the drug problem, you know, how much crime? I would say 95% of our crime.
Holy crap.
Would be reduced. Yeah. Total crime. That includes homicide, everything down to, you know, shoplifting.
Yeah.
If you could solve the drug crisis. And now, from my perspective, my whole thing is like, I don't think that the drug crisis is going to be solved by arresting our way out of that problem. I actually do think that the legislator did some pretty meaningful work with the Blake fix. Making it a gross misdemeanor, I think, was pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And, you know, the felony, and you know what, like the felony thing, you know, the way that the prosecution stuff is broken down in most of the state, right, is that the prosecutor, the county prosecutor is responsible for all the felonies, and then the cities will usually get their own attorney. Well, you just went from a really weak felony because the prosecutor is dealing with homicide and robbery and rape to a really strong misdemeanor for the cities to go after. And really the focus, what I liked about the Blake fix, the focus of it is getting people help and getting people treatment and expanding the resources to open up more rehabilitation facilities because there's a lot of people that are seeking treatment. But then if there's not a bed available right this second, I'm going to go back to doing what I was doing. And we see that a lot with our narcotics task force. The task force has a lot of informants. And one of the things that we try to do with the task force is that if you help us, we'll help you. So not only will we make the drug charges go away, but we'll get you a bed as soon as we can. So we try to do that to help people that flip and become informants. And then obviously that allows us to go after the cartel and kind of our mid-level dealers.
Yeah. Let me ask you about something you said there, though, that we're not going to arrest our way out of this. Because I'm wondering if our opinion is the same, but we're just coming about it different ways. I also don't think you can arrest your way out of a drug crisis, but isn't that the stick that makes them more likely to take the carrot?
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. You know, I think with us, right, and you've kind of seen it in the way that our deputies have gone about their work, since the law changed, we have made zero arrests for just drug possession. So not one person has been booked into the county jail because, you know, we did a field interview and the person had narcotics on them.
Okay.
We have made arrests, however, for people who have drugs on them while they're committing other crimes, while they're prowling vehicles, while they're shoplifting, doing those kinds of things. And that's really where I want our focus to be. You know, because the reality is when you have limited resources, the person I'm least concerned about is the person who uses drugs in their home and doesn't go out and commit crimes.
Yeah.
They're at the bottom end of the scale as far as concern.
Isn't that probably pretty rare? If you're using a drug like fentanyl or something where you're paying for it somehow.
Yeah, it's tough to say. It really is because, I have to think that there's a lot more people using drugs than we're coming in contact with.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So it's tough to say, but I will say that, you know, our big focus has been, you know, let's get the person who is, you know, doing organized retail theft,
yeah.
who has a drug addiction problem, and let's try to get them the assistance, whether it's through, you know, court or whatever it mm-hmm. is, however, whatever mechanism, you're right. I think there is some weight when the right. court system has teeth and can say, listen, you're in here for organized yeah. retail theft. You have two options in front of you.
Right. That's what I'm saying is the threat of arrest or jail time is the opportunity to say or
yep.
this rather than the person what? Like on Third Avenue, high out of their freaking mind, is right. just going to have an epiphany. Like, you know, I should go right. get better. Yeah, like, that's not going
to
happen.
No. And a big thing of this, I think when we look at the total ecosystem, and if I had the answer to this, I wouldn't be the sheriff. I'd be making a lot more money somewhere yes, as an yeah. advisor for the entire world.
Yes.
But I really think it comes, you can't just focus in too hard on one specific issue because one thing isn't creating this. It's,
yeah.
it's so many things, right? It's so many people who are on the fringe of being homeless because yeah. inflation has gotten so high and they can't afford the gas tax going into their car to get to work and all the, it's everything combined. So for me, our big thing has been one, I don't want to fill my jail with simple drug possession users.
Sure.
Like we have a lead program and a ton of other different resources that we have for that. And two, it's also why, even though it hasn't been super popular, I've also really supported like the tiny home villages and things like mm-hmm. that. Because the idea that someone who is currently houseless is going to have this epiphany and decide they want to go be clean, but they still live in a tent on the side of the freeway. You know, people who don't even have a place to shower and yeah. lock up their things at night yeah. are not going to go down the path of recovery very easily. Mm-hmm. So anything that we can do to try and increase the chances that someone's going to be successful in that, that's one less person we're going to contact yep. in the future.
Baby steps. Well, I appreciate the way that the nuance you're able to use to talk about these issues. I think it's really refreshing. We might not agree on everything.
Sure.
But I really respect your willingness to sort of step outside what people expect a sheriff to be and to yeah. talk about and the positions he's willing to take. So Sheriff Derek Sanders, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it, my conversation with Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders. I think something I appreciate about him, now I've disagreed with some things he's done that I felt like was acquiescing to a mob, as we discussed in that interview. I do think he's a very contemplative guy, though. And that's the first real lengthy in-person interview that I've done with him. And I can tell that he gives a lot of thought to things. So maybe where I thought he was just kowtowing to a mob, it was a realization or a belief on his part that he actually had done something that he shouldn't have done. So whether you agree with him or not, I absolutely admire sort of his, you know, belief that you do have to listen to people even if you don't agree with them, and his real belief that he's a public servant first and foremost. Now, Nicole, I feel like you would have been a little more harsh on him.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because even those people that came to him with good arguments, did they really outweigh the other side's
yeah.
good arguments? I don't think so. They're just louder and they're just in his face more. And yeah. so, no.
Well, it's hard. Unless you pull the population, you can guess it's 50-50, but is it 50-50? And I tend to agree with you that, mm-mm. but that's the fault of community members who we talk about all the time. Like, speak up, say something about all these crazy yep. things. Gender ideology, which we just talked about on the show yesterday with David. There's a lot of Americans and Washingtonians who think some of that stuff is freaking weird. But they don't want to say anything about it because yep. they're like, oh, I can't because I'll be called a transphobe. And they don't want to say anything about this defending an officer who, you know, was charged with killing a black man because they're like, I'll be called racist. You just got to do it, because if you don't do it, the people who are on the same fringe that are always willing to share their fringe beliefs, in my opinion,
yep.
they're always going to have the final say, because they're always going to be squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't have much more to say.
All right. Well, next time you'll do the interview,
but, you know.
Next time I interview him, I'll just give you a, I'll turn your mic on. You can just pipe in. You'll be like, bull.
That's probably better. I don't, but
baloney.
We have all these people that we disagree with. I really, yeah. really like.
Yeah. I really,
but
he's a good
they're
guy.
Good people. And I think they're doing their best in general. Like I think we need more people willing to run for these roles, right? Like I'm not willing to, right. so I appreciate that they're willing to and they're making tough decisions, because it's a tough job.
Yeah. Would you say that it's possible to like someone you don't agree with all the time?
Occasionally.
Wow. We should call this show Undivided.
We should.
Wow, that would be a good name. All right, Nicole, thank you. So we will have an episode of Sundays with Subscribers per the usual this Sunday, and then Monday, unless there's a catastrophe. I should knock on wood.
You'll see us tan.
We'll both be Tanner. I'll probably also be a little, like, sunburned is my guess, because, you know.
My hair might be lighter.
We will be back with a live show Monday at noon from our brand new studio.
It's going to be
very exciting. We're probably more excited than you are, but, probably, you know, but we're excited. So, all right. Thank you so much, Nicole. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, we would be eternally grateful. It's just $5 a month. You can sign up at UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.